Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. We design, craft and install beautiful kitchens. cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Now it's time for the Friday gathering, and this week I'm joined in the studio by Nisha Murray, who's Fine Gael TD for Dublin Bay North. Jennifer Bray is with us, Sunday Times political editor. Louise O'Reilly, Sinn Féin TD for Dublin Fingal and spokesperson on social protection. And Kevin Doyle, group head of news at independent.ie. And thank you all for coming in today. Great to have you with us. I'm going to start with a news story which emerged towards the end of the week when the Taoiseach Simon Harris said Ireland's migration numbers are just too high. He said the system isn't built to deal with such large numbers, and he said it all needs to be considered in a serious way by the government. And then when we had Micheál Martin in here yesterday, he pretty much supported those comments as well, and that has prompted reaction from, amongst others, Gary Gannon from the Social Democrats. Anisha, I'll come to you first. Gary Gannon said the Taoiseach is going down the Nigel Farage route with these comments. So is the government leaning into that sort of divisive rhetoric now with comments like that? Is that where we're headed?
Yeah, so I don't think anybody could compare the government's position the last number of years on immigration here to Nigel Farage and what where Nigel Farage stands. I don't know Nigel, but his record is pretty clear. I mean, Simon was, Antonis was expressing a frustration with the system that's there at the moment in terms of its ability to process stuff quickly and fairly. There is some progress being made now in terms of turnaround times. And in fact, the IPASS numbers, if you look at them this year, they're actually down a bit in terms of last year, year to date, to the end of September, latest data. So look, we have to be straight up in this. There is a system there and it does come under pressure. We read this morning in terms of Ukrainians, things have changed in Ukraine. We seem to have an uptick again in numbers of people coming from Ukraine. Obviously not going through the IPASS system, but the system has to deal with all these sorts of moving parts around the world.
But what needs to change? Because that's what the Taoiseach has said. He's not talking about the system as it currently exists. We need to have a serious look at the system, he said.
Yeah, no, I think the Taoiseach is, in my view, having read what he said, he's expressing a frustration with the system as it stands and how it processes stuff, how it deals with deportations, how fast it gets decisions in terms of, you know, whether people can stay or whether they have to go, how they're moved out. And to be fair to Colin Brophy and
What he's also saying is that there are too many people applying for asylum here, and the Taoiseach supported him on those comments.
Yeah, and that's in the context of what the system can handle at the moment in terms of the ability of the system that's there to take
those. So we need to expand the system.
Well, I think, I mean, resources have gone into the system, but look at the situation with Ukraine. I just read this morning in terms of Ukraine, I think there are 50 people a day again coming now, or maybe it's 50 a week, but there are big numbers coming again from Ukraine, you know, of the age. I think Ukraine has made
that's
a change
different,
in terms
that's,
of...
That's different.
But it's all the same. It is different.
We have a temporary protection system for them.
Yeah, and I'm not putting
EU.
The time, but it's all down to resources. They all take resources and processing. We have responsibilities under international law to process people, to give them a fair hearing, to assess their application.
Okay.
But it's
Jennifer,
all resourcing.
What do you read into what was said this week?
I definitely think that the government is continuing along the kind of previous lines that it was pursuing in terms of tightening up not just immigration laws, but also kind of the language around it, the rhetoric around it, possibly in response to kind of events that we've seen recently, whether that be City West or elsewhere. And I think that it's not just the Ukrainian issue that you mentioned. It's also kind of this charge that there are a lot of people who are coming into Ireland who are effectively economic immigrants. And there seems to be concern within government on that. And that seems to be reflected across all levels. I think this talk that we see today about reducing the amount of time that Ukrainians spend in state accommodation from 90 days to 30 days is just the tip of the iceberg when the government is talking about changes. I can definitely see in the near future a complete wholesale change, whether that be in relation to the BOTP, Beneficiaries of Temporary Protected, that directive, or whether that be actually the 24,000 people who are currently in state accommodation, what happens to them?
Okay, Louise, what's your view on this? Because do you agree that the system isn't equipped, first of all, to deal with the number of people who are coming in to the country?
Well, can I just, before we get into this, very much welcome Richard Boyd Barrett back to the political fray. I was delighted to hear him on the radio this morning, and I just wanted to
And you know,
to,
we had so many. I'm still looking
imagine,
at all the messages coming in for Richard.
I can absolutely
Richard
imagine
today.
That, but I did just want to say that because in a world where there's not a lot of good news, that was, I think, you know, some very
absolutely.
Good news. And,
absolutely.
And fair play to you for government. Now, just to get back to the question you're saying, look, the government have created the system. They tried to do the same thing with their homeless crisis, and somehow that they think that people would be distracted. And I think that that's kind of what they do. Sometimes they throw this rhetoric out there in the hope that people will be distracted. I mean, you had Simon Harris rambling up to a microphone there yesterday, or was it the day before, to say that the system cannot cope. But he fails to mention it is the system that he and his government have designed. It is their failings that has caused this. And
but your own Matt Carthy said that your party hasn't been vocal enough on your position on the government management of the IPAS system. But that's a concession that Matt is making.
The evidence is very, very clear. You know, we have on the one hand a small number of people who are being made millionaires off the back of human misery. The people who are engaged in these contracts with the government are making an absolute fortune.
That's because the government has decided to use that system.
Exactly.
And, you know, and they've been awarded contracts under that system.
Exactly. And you're making my point for me. The government have decided to use that system. The government have designed the system. And then you have the deputy head of government and the head of government ramble up to a microphone and say, well, God, isn't this system just awful? It is the system that they have designed. They have designed a system.
But are there too many people coming here? Like, what is Sinn Féin's position on that?
So at the moment, the system is becoming overwhelmed simply because the government have not planned. I mean, it was months ago that Matt Carthy was warning the government there was going to be an increase in the number of people coming from Ukraine. That is a warning to be prepared. They were not prepared. And it doesn't exactly fill me with confidence when Nisha says, I think it might be 50 a day, or it could indeed be 50 a week. I mean, you know, an inability to be able to put
that's
a
not
figure.
Fair. I mean, that, but I, that, just picked that's it. Exactly I just read that in the paper said. This morning. I was trying to prepare
yeah,
to be here. So
yeah,
that's
I understand I mean, that's, yeah. that. No, I understand that. But it is indicative.
I'm not a member of government.
Okay, stop interrupting me. It is indicative. You are a government TD.
Yes, I accept that, a backbench.
And the facts should be available, I would have thought, to you. But you cannot say if the number is 50 or 350. So it is a failure on the part of your government that has caused
but by the, same token,
the head
Louise,
and the deputy
I don't,
head
I don't
of government.
Have a clear view of your position on the number of people coming here to seek international protection. Do you feel it is too many? Do you feel we should welcome more? What is Sinn Féin's position
so
on
I,
this?
We have said, and we have consistently said, what we need is a system that is properly resourced, that is fair, but that is also enforced, so that when a person has gone through the international protection system, when they have had their case dealt with, when they have been through whatever appeals mechanisms are there for them, that if the decision is that they stay, well, then they stay. And if the decision is that they go, well, then they go. But the government have presided over a system whereby deportation orders are issued and they are not followed up on in any more than about 6%
of cases. So you'd be happy to see more deportations?
We would be happy to see a system that is enforced, Claire, and it isn't enforced. So, you know, the system is not properly resourced. You've got a wait of about 27 months for people. That is not a system that is efficient.
Okay. Kevin Doyle, what do you think of this issue being in the news in the first place and the Taoiseach making those comments and putting it on the agenda?
I think we're in a third phase of what's happened with immigration in this country, because if we go back a decade, this wasn't a political topic. It wasn't talked about at election time or non-election time. And there was 2,000 or 3,000 people coming every year. The system could handle it. We had centres like Mosny that nobody really paid much attention to. What Louise says is right. There was no enforcement, but nobody really cared. So people were told they had no entitlement to be here. There was no follow-up and the world kept turning and it wasn't a big issue.
But Kevin, you'll remember that in the last government, the one prior to this one, there was a commitment to end direct provision.
Yeah.
Now we're at this stage where we're saying, or our government is saying, we need to change the system because there's too many people coming here.
We were talking about things like turnkey accommodation for everybody, which obviously the housing crisis has completely moved that. We can't do that for homeless Irish families now, which sparks this debate. So that's the first phase. The second phase, I suppose, to some extent, was COVID, which everything got put on hold. And now this third phase, which is we've had up to 20,000 people arriving each year. The system can't handle it. The government are buying up places like City West. And now there was a time I remember sitting on panels like this where an opposition TD who might be a bit more to the right would use language like influx or surge. And the government TD in response would say, you can't use language like that. That's inflammatory. And now that's part of the common discourse, I think, within Leinster House, that politicians from all sides use that sort of language. So we have moved quite far from this Ireland of 100,000 welcomes to this being a problem. Mm-hmm.
Does that reflect what they're hearing from their constituents?
Of course it does. It reflects what we saw at City West. It reflects what we saw in Clondalkin. It reflects what we saw in the Dublin riot. It reflects that there is an unhappiness there. It reflects the fact that there are tricolours up across housing estates in Dublin that are clearly there for reasons related to the debate around immigration. So when Simon Harris is starting to use this rhetoric, Louise is right. This is the system the government built. They never planned, they never expected that Ireland would face this problem, because we were always this small country on the west of Europe that wasn't that easy to get to, relatively speaking. Mm. And now we have a problem. And I think saying they need to change something is true. I don't think that's quite Nigel Farage levels of let them turn back the small boats. But something does need to change. But talking about it won't do that.
Well, I'm just interested to know, Jen, where you see this going. I mean, you say that you expect there to be a wholesale change in how we deal with this. What does that look like?
So obviously there's a new European migration pact and there's a whole new European law that comes in under that. So our entire system, how it's structured, is going to change to bring us more in line so that every European country deals with these cases in a very similar way. But I think a bigger question longer term is we've constantly seen the beneficiaries of temporary protection directive extended. And that gives all these kind of benefits to Ukrainians and people who are coming over from such places. And I definitely detect within government, and also reading between the lines of reports from other news outlets in other European countries, a desire across Europe for this to end. And I don't think that's a conversation that we've really gotten into yet or fully explored, because to all extents and purposes, the war in Ukraine is not over. Mm-hmm. And where does that leave us kind of in a moral position as well? But I think the fact of the matter for politicians is they're, like you said, hearing feedback from their constituencies, but they're also seeing the pressure in their own areas. And like Kevin said, there was a time when in the Dáil, if a politician said, my constituents are complaining about XYZ lack of services, and at the same time this, that they would be kind of shouted down. This is a mainstream conversation now. And I think that they're reflecting that in across political discourse. And I think that that's what you're going to see in the next couple of months, is this talk about the new system, which kind of has gone under the radar and is going to cost a lot of money, by the way, but also our longer term directives. What do we do about those? Are we happy for them to continue? Are all political parties happy for them to stay in place? Or is it time to actually genuinely talk about the end of those, mm-hmm. and what that means for the people who are in existing state accommodation? Do they lose all of their benefits?
Remember the conversation that was here when the Tory government in the UK was looking at the Rwanda project and sending immigrants to Rwanda and God knows what conditions and whatever that was there. And people here thought this was the most shocking, like outrageous, another Boris Johnson kind of madcap thing that's just inhumane. And now that's not being talked about as a crazy idea anymore.
Well, you have kind of during the week, the Taoiseach talking about, you know, well, maybe we could put people in hubs that are in Europe outside of the normal locations. Like a year ago, that would have been a hugely controversial thing to say.
That would have been called racist a year ago.
Yeah, it's just a huge shift in kind of political discourse. Mm. And the fact that it's coming back to the top of the agenda as well is just really, really interesting.
Do you sense that shift, Louise, when you're talking to your constituents about this?
I don't necessarily. What I do sense is a real growing frustration with the government. I mean, if you look at the Temporary Protection Directive, just as an example of the failure to confront and deal with an issue, that's been extended now out to 2027, which means a temporary emergency measure will be in place for 5 years. Like, you can't be in an emergency situation for 5 years. That needs to be put onto a stable footing. And we need to examine the fact that people who are fleeing war and persecution need to be treated the same, regardless of what country it is that they are coming from. That's not the case. And when this issue was, the policy change happened in Ukraine, which was inevitably going to lead to a greater number of people coming to Ireland, Matt Carthy raised this directly with the minister, just similar to the government rep on this panel, wasn't able to give projections, wasn't able to give any idea as to what the potential implications were going to be. Months have passed and no preparation was made. So you keep coming back to the same thing again and again. And my constituents are no different to anyone else's. They see incompetence. They are frustrated at the government's failure to get to grips with a whole range of issues. And then when they fail, and they fail abjectly, to simply ramble up to a microphone, point at it and go, well, that is desperate and something needs to change, without any acknowledgement of the fact that they are in charge. They are the ones who have their hands on the levers of power. They are the ones with the power to change and shape direction, and they don't do it. And when they fail, they try to blame everyone around them and they try to turn themselves into commentators, okay, which is not acceptable.
Nisha, do you want to come back in on that? Because I want to move on, but just to respond to that and then we'll move on to
something
else.
Yeah, just a couple of things. We can't be afraid to have this debate. It's good that we have this debate without the inflammatory language. I mean, like, I appreciate Louise wants to, you know, have a free shot at the government on everything. That was 50 a day, by the way. It's 50 Ukrainians a day. The TPD was a European-wide directive that came in on account of the Ukrainian...
It's the temporary protection.
Yeah, on account of the Ukrainian crisis. The Europe had to do that. There was, you know, that was actually in its own way, it was kind of innovative in terms of doing it. I think it was the first time it had been done. The language, we have to have this debate. We have to put the resources into the system. But like, if you look at 2025, 9,589 IPAS applications year to date end of September. 2024, 15,000, nearly 16,000 IPAS applications year to date. We can't conflate the two systems, but a previous speaker mentioned the EU Migration Pact. That is very important because we have to partner with European neighbours on this issue. We have to look at things like the government providing accommodation directly in partnership with European neighbours, looking at borders around Europe. We're going to have to go that way.
So there's not a preferential system in different member
Whatever
states?
Whatever system we come up with has to work across Europe. Uh-huh. I mean, this is a European issue now. But look, the language around Nigel Farage is not helpful, but we have to have that debate.
All right, well, listen, let's move on. And the presidential election is still very much in the air, isn't it? I mean, we Micheál Martin here yesterday, but I want to focus on Fine Gael because we have Nisha here. Sorry, Nisha.
Let's start with Louise. Do you want to start with Louise and Fine Gael? Give her the free
Louise
shot.
Louise is going to tell us
shot.
That they won.
Delighted to talk. I talk all day about that campaign chair. It's no bother at all.
But Nisha, for you guys in Fine Gael, do you think now, looking back on it, it was a referendum on the government?
I think there was an element of that, looking back on it. All right. So you have, a narrow field of candidates. One candidate didn't last. So you had a government candidate and you had, another candidate. So for some people, it was easy to turn it into that. And anybody that had a grievance with, you know, the government or issues in the past could, you know, look at it that way. That's fair enough. That's certainly part of the narrative. A narrow field doesn't help that sort of situation. You know, I mean, I think like things like podcasts were a feature in an election like this that there weren't a feature in elections before. I mean, like any party, we're going to have to look at what happened, try and learn from it, learn for the campaign.
So the
playbook.
Campaign wasn't as smart and clever for Fine Gael as
it was
for
Catherine Connolly. How do you define smart and clever?
Well, you mentioned podcasts, you know, reaching out to people where they are.
Yeah, there are always things like that we should be looking to learn from. Podcasts probably give you a deeper engagement in terms of a dialogue with the candidate. It's probably a little bit easier to do for somebody who's on the opposition than somebody who's in government. I mean, Heather Humphreys was asked a lot about previous government decisions. I get that. I understand how that comes about in terms of politics. Mm-hmm. That was, you know, that made it difficult. She had other issues she had to deal with. She had the whole Orange Order issue, which was difficult, which I thought was unfair. All of those issues we had to deal with as a campaign.
Okay.
I mean, in the context of a general election, I mean, I suppose in the context of the vote from a Fine Gael perspective, if I go back to 2012, Gay Mitchell, that was a tough campaign for us as well. So I suppose at one level you could look at it, it's come on quite a bit since then.
What's your assessment of the fallout, Kevin, today?
If Gay Mitchell is your starting bar, it's quite a low bar, if we're honest about it, Nisha. I think from Fine Gael's perspective, I mean, the Micheál Martin interview for a second was extraordinary because in 14 years of his leadership, I don't think I've ever heard him have to do an interview like that, where he sounded on the ropes, fighting for his authority, not just his position, but his authority within the parties. That was quite extraordinary. But look, you gave that a good airing, I suppose, yesterday, in fairness. From a Fine Gael perspective, look, I think there's plenty of blame going around, and maybe it's... Whereas Micheál Martin and Jack Chambers are getting all the blame, within Fine Gael, there's a bit more blame being spread. So you could give some of it to Jim Gavin because once he was gone, the transfers were gone. You could give some of it to Ivan Yates because once he started talking about smear the bejesus, well, then every difficult question that was asked of Catherine Connolly became, that's a smear. Lucy O'Farrell, I think, definitely had an impact with a lot of people and the position she took during the campaign. So, and I also think that Fine Gael vastly underestimated Catherine Connolly. I think they didn't realise that she could be such a good and fit campaigner, and that she could take that message all around the country and mobilise people the way she did. So I think they didn't plan a campaign to beat Catherine Connolly, and that all came too late. And if you look at the way it started out, Heather Humphrey started out as almost motherhood and apple pie, because that's Heather Humphrey's perception. Within Fine Gael and within Leinster House, she's seen as a lovely person. But then when that wasn't working, they had to pivot to attack. And I don't think Heather Humphrey's heart was ever in those attacks. That was all being done elsewhere for her. And at that stage, the gig was up, really. I think the outcome of the election was quite clear from far out.
Well, Jen, is the leadership of Fine Gael in as much trouble as the leadership of Fianna Fáil seemed to be in?
I don't think so. I think that, you know, in terms of the fallout, it definitely seems to be worse within Fianna Fáil. There's been a lot of coverage this week of whether Micheál Martin is safe or not, about the rebels having the signatures required to put down a motion of no confidence next week. My assessment of it right now is that he is absolutely not in the clear. He is still in the danger zone. But I think that realistically, at the success of any such motion or heave is completely contingent on people like Jim O'Callaghan coming out. And I don't see him doing that. What I was told by people who were working quite close with him, or even TDs in his own party who are dealing with him, and by the way, are very impressed with him, that he genuinely is enjoying the job and he wants to continue. However, there has to come a stage in this conversation where some of the ministers come out, because you have these three camps. You have the first camp, which are the rebels. They have the signatures, I believe they do. And then you have, on the complete opposite side, the ministers. They're not going to step out of line. They don't want to have to resign. They don't want to lose their job. And then in the middle, you have just a lot of people who are silent right now. Like, if you think about, Micheál Martin was on the show yesterday. I agree with Kevin, extraordinary interview. How many Fianna Fáil backbenchers have been out this week defending Micheál Martin? I can't think of one that I can remember.
Ministers,
but backbenchers. Mm-hmm. So I think that this story is not over yet. And a heave can come in many parts. It doesn't have to be that this is successful.
Is it all about the presidential election, what's going on in Fianna Fáil?
I think a big part of it is. Honestly, I do. But I think there's been a disaffected rump of people who are annoyed at Micheál Martin for such a long time, because they view him, and you put this to him, as having a top-down style leadership. I was so surprised to hear him deny that so fulsomely, when that is a charge that has been made time and time again, possibly to his, probably to his face, by his own party, to the point that he is now bringing in backbenchers one by one to have these meetings with. Apparently these meetings go on for hours and they touch on everything you could imagine across the globe.
So when I put that to him about the top-down thing and the James O'Connor saying he'd Louis XIV style leadership.
Nigel Farage is the deputy leader of the government and we have Louis XIV as the leader. So I don't know where we're going in this country.
Well, he said he's only ever a phone call away, you know, and when that phone rings, he will always take the call. That's what he's... And he says it's never been any other way.
But I don't think that... I think he's missing the point there. It's not that he's only ever a phone call away. It's things like the week before the budget, their parliamentary party meeting was cancelled in Fianna Fáil. This caused unbelievable levels of anger because they had such huge issues with, let's say, the Fine Gael VAT push. They didn't get to air those. They didn't get to kind of respond to what their constituents were saying. Put that to Micheál Martin. It's not that they can just ring him anytime. It's that they don't feel that he is connecting with them. Mm-hmm. It's the other way around. And... honestly, I think that when you look at it in the round, some of it is disaffected people who have been angry at Micheál Martin for a long time. A lot of it are people who are mortified about what happened, but not just what happened, the way it happened. This idea that he did. Which I remember covering the story the weekend when they were picking Jim Gavin and talking to ministers and TDs who said, yeah, Micheál was on last night. Yeah, Jack Chambers was on last night. Made very clear to me, Jim's the man, so I'll go for Jim. And that was literally what was said to me. So...
take from that what you will.
And Louise, for you, I mean, a candidate of the left is elected mm-hmm. president, but yes. when it comes to a general election, when it comes to government, the people vote for Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael.
Well, I was actually looking at this and, you know, let's not in any way detract from Catherine's achievement, a landslide victory on the back of an incredibly positive grassroots campaign. You know, we were out knocking, I was adding it up, I was out more than 20 times rapping doors as part of the Connolly campaign. The feedback we were getting was fantastic. People could see that there was, yes, there was unity among the opposition parties on the left, but also that we united behind a really, really good candidate.
Took you a while now, might I say, to come in behind her.
That was reflected in the result. And when we did, it was a game changer because it put her from fourth up to first. So, you know, absolutely, there were some people I know who were taken aback until they actually stepped back and realised, yes, it was mm-hmm. A game changer when we came in behind her. And it was a very positive, it actually reminded me
Back to the question
of the Eighth Amendment campaign, yep. that kind of collective effort to and a grassroots led campaign.
But it worked. It worked in the presidential campaign. Can it work in a general election campaign? And do you think it's possible to unite the left when it comes to a general election campaign? Because it hasn't been possible up to now.
Well, the evidence is there that it is possible because we just have. We came in as a united left grouping behind Catherine Connolly and we saw that.
But even Richard Boyd Barrett this morning said, you know, that it is difficult to do that. It's difficult to keep the left
together. Will you do it in Galway West?
But what it is simple to do is to find those things about which we agree and to work on those. Nobody is suggesting for a moment that parties will give up their unique identity. In fact, I mean, we see no unique identity on the government benches and people ask, when will the merger happen? I don't know. There's no policy difference. I see no reason other than the thing that's about to get them all very excited, which is, you know, talk of perhaps their own jobs. And this is something now, and I'm a long time observing Irish politics, and you will see it coming in the next couple of weeks. The members of government parties who cannot find any passion for the rising level of child homelessness, can't find any passion for the cost of living crisis, by Jesus, we're going to see some passion now as they start to look internally and they perceive to be fighting and scrapping it out for their own jobs. That is the only time, unfortunately, ever see passion from those people. But we saw passion as part of the Catherine Connolly campaign, and it was a wonderful campaign to be involved in simply because it was so positive. Will we agree with other parties on everything? Of course we won't. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if I agreed, if Deputy Holly Cairns agreed with Sinn Féin on everything, she could join Sinn Féin, you know, and that's not what.
But there must be a concern for you, Nisha. You know, you see that success when it came to the presidential election with the coalescing of the left, that it could be replicated.
Yeah, the history, traditionally, it hasn't worked. I think the left has struggled down through the years to actually bring that about at a general election time, which is a first order election. Fine Gael has stood in many, many general elections. Each time we get a mandate, each time we look to negotiate a programme and we go, you know, in recent years we have been looking to go into power and to try and implement that. That's what politics is about, and I'm always proud of that mandate. All we right. get a mandate at every general election and we try and use it.
There, we're going to leave it. Thank you very much for being with us, Nisha O'Murray, Louise O'Reilly, Jennifer Bray and Kevin Doyle. Back after this break.
Text 51551 today with Clare Byrne on RTE Radio 1.